card, DMV ID card, Mr. Chairman, OLCC ID card, there's a number of documents we can collect, and I'd agree that we ought to have a list, but I still think it ought to be two, and one ought to have a photo if at all possible.
What's the sentiments on tourism?
I'd like to think a person could throw a driver's license down and call that good. That's my sentiment, but.
Mr. Chairman, I would tend to say either one with a photograph or two of the others.
There you go.
Mr. Chairman. You have two pieces of ID to cash a check. Unreasonable to, but the same requirement to buy a gun.
Credit card?
Fishing license, two pieces of ID, one of which must bear a photograph. Good language.
I'll buy that.
Let's go for that then, two pieces of identification, one of which must bear a photograph. Would there be any objection of the committee?
Are we going to define any more specifically than that, what that ID has to be?
How recently the photograph has been taken?
Play around in circles without your compass.
I got it on that part.
I think current ID is probably the better term, it's supposed to valid. Pieces of current ID, one of which, everyone's pulling out their light things.
I'm up to eight right now.
Yes, I'm Bill Schwartz, according to this one, no.
And there's a picture on there, Representative Miller.
Of current ID.
Two pieces of current ID, one of which.
Must bear a photograph.
Of whom?
Of the applicant.
That would be a great one.
We don't want to leave any ambiguities there, they might drive a truck through. Okay, that being, I'll take a proposed amendment, Representative Bryan.
Right.
Proposes that as a conceptual amendment to be put in throughout the statute, any objections?
I'm sorry.
Counsel, please state the.
That under the section that is either called documentation of origin or proof of identification, it will read two pieces of current identification, one of which must bear a photograph of the applicant. I'm going to have to fit it to fit the form, but that's the conceptual part.
No list?
No list.
Just any two pieces, one of which has a photo?
No.
Shouldn't these say government issued ID?
About that.
I guess you.
Banks are more careful than the government.
Your mother could go home and make you one at home and put your picture on it.
I think we could list the types, but I think we're getting into a lot of formsmanship. Two pieces of ID, one of which must bear a photograph and one of which must be government issue. Doesn't have to be the same one as the photograph.
Any sentiments on that is? Complicated.
Maybe we can get some input from a dealer.
Do we have a dealer that wants to give us some input?
Put on this to help give us some guidance?
Well, what can I say? Two pieces of ID, it would be fine, I think, with most dealers that I know. It would be fine with myself. We're going around in the same circle that if somebody really wants to get phony ID, they're going to get it. If you drop your wallet and I pick it up and I throw your driver's license away and take the rest of it down, and I'll walk out of motor vehicles in 15 minutes with my picture on a card that says I'm Ernie Calhoun.
Sure you want to do that, Mr. Mayor?
Well,
just to
buy a gun for nefarious purposes.
I see.
But two pieces would, I would defer to the police if that's acceptable to them, it's acceptable to us.
That was our original intent when we worked on the committee was to, first off, have a shopping list of identification available, and secondly, to come up with some type of identification that the dealer would feel comfortable with.
I'd say two pieces of ID, one with photo, or two pieces of ID of the same kind that you would accept if you were cashing this man's check.
That'd get,
put your money where your mouth is.
Nobody can find a gun like that with a case.
Gun dealer sitting right in front row that just.
Gun dealer in the front row that might like to step forward and tell us his name and give us some quick input on this.
My name is Baker, Roger Baker, from the Firearm Center. Been in the business 27 years in selling firearms and building and designing.
Sir, you need to sit down and sit, speak into a microphone.
Grab a chair up there real quick if you can, and we'll.
And I took my time out. My secretary's kicking me now for coming down here. She figures it's not going to do any good, but I figure it is going to do some good. Now, selling firearms to the public is one thing. What we're doing here, we're only selling and making this new laws for the legal people. Now, in the past 2 months, I have taken a survey in my office on people that have come in. Some of them have been criminals. I've had Crip come into my office and so forth and so on. They will not get guns. They cannot get guns because they do not have the proper identification. But on the other hand, we have the federal forms to fill out. We've got that stack of forms to fill out, which takes us about 25 to 30 minutes of time to fill out. And on the state forms, we have to fill these forms out. We have to take our time out to go downtown, take the police forms downtown, and then we have to wait 5 days. If we don't hear anything in 5 days, then we can let them have the gun. Now, getting back to Representative Mannix here, that the man puts down, I've known him for 5 days. Well, that could be so, or 5 months or 5 years. That doesn't change anything now. I've known people for 30 years ago out and might create a crime. The licensing on two pieces of identification, that would be fine if it doesn't destruct the setup with the dealer. The dealer is the one who's suffering from these laws, because if there are too many laws, the people say, oh, the hell with it, Roger, I'll go out in the street and buy them like I did last week. I told you, this man came in, he was turned down. I got a police form from Hudson Fox.
What we need to get focused on is we're wondering, we're considering at least what type of identification we want. Representative Bryan, why don't you read that language to us, and we'll see what our gun dealer thinks about it.
Chairman, thank you. The question is, would this work for gun dealers? Two pieces of current identification, one of which must bear a photograph of the applicant.
Well, two pieces of identification for a handgun, if a man come in, he's 21 years or over, can have one. He wouldn't have much of more than two pieces, or probably just a driver's license. So for, that's going to throw him out. How many kids over 21 years old that can have a handgun will have more than one piece of identification except the driver's license? Where's he got? He hasn't been in the service.
This would allow for, this is two pieces, one of which would be a piece of
okay, the then we would go back to the driver's license then.
Right, he'd have a driver's license and a student body card or a credit
okay,
card.
Okay, a dune buggy card would be fine, but what I'm getting at is that if he comes in with a driver's license with his picture on it, that is the best identification in 27 years I've been selling guns. And I've sold thousands of guns, and I've only had two people in 27 years that have misused them on this identification form. Now, if we start making more, believe me, if we start making more paraphernalia and hard laws, you're going to see the people buy the guns off the street.
We're not getting testimony. We're asking a certain question.
We're working on a specific, if we get anybody up here to help us out, and a lot of them are used to this, we're working on a specific issue.
I think one piece, possibly two, that a person over 21 years of age could have that would hold. That's what we're up against.
I think we're allowing for that in this language. The question is, for example, if they don't have a driver's license, we still want a piece of ID that has a photograph.
Okay, then if he's working, you've got the Social Security. But there's a language, too, in the Social Security that you cannot use for firearms.
There's no photograph either.
Chairman, if I may, we're going around and we're coming right back to where I started in my on page 7. I have the exact same forms that this gentleman is required to fill out. He's very familiar with this form. If you got my, you don't have a copy of my dash one amendment, so you wouldn't get to see. That is the forms that he has to fill out. every time he sells a handgun. Now, also on that form, I've expanded it to include a concealed weapons license, because in another section of that bill, it allows, it exempts the waiting period from those that have those, and it asks to the number. And these people are very judicious. I don't know of anybody in my, personally, and I know a lot of gun owners that have ever been able to go in and use some bogus kind of identification to buy a legal handgun. I mean, it may be done, but I'll bet it's not done as much as people steal guns.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Maddox?
Why don't we then say, I don't know whether or not there's extra pull-apart forms on the federal forms. Those, I assume they're carbonized forms from the federal government?
Yes, uh-huh.
Are there any extras on those?
Yes, we got more coming to us, new ones.
What if we let the dealer use the carbonized federal forms if they meet our requirements, and you avoid one more set of paperwork?
That was my intention.
Mr. Nichols, you don't think that'll work?
Well, that's information.
Federal forms aren't carbonized.
Oh, they're not?
No, the state forms.
Single sheet.
No, but they will come out this year, the new forms that are coming out, where I think we'll be.
What if we have state forms that are carbonized, that meet the exact federal standards, so that the top sheet you tear off goes to the federal government and the next few sheets are state sheets, and then you've got one set of forms to use for all firearms dealers in the state?
That would be
and awesome. We just pattern, if you could get us a copy of the federal form, I'd like to look at. I trust Representative Dwyer, I'd just like to see one.
Down in legislative council, I didn't bring it, but I gave her that to use as a model. And by the way, for the committee's benefit, all those applications are numbered, and they can't have any missing, and they couldn't give me a form. They had to give me a copy of the form, because they have to account in their journal for every one of those forms.
Now, we still wouldn't have the thumbprint, but we could provide separately for that if we wanted. Or we could provide
out
for a photocopy. Pardon?
You're going to be blown out. Once you get the thumbprints and the fingerprints, the people just say, oh, the heck with it, I'll go out in the street.
Well, that's another issue, but I'm talking forms right now and identification.
Appreciate your help on this. Okay, I think if I had a preference here, would be to go with the federal language without any greater clarification, but I'm willing to go along with the whatever we want to do. I think that the two-piece language seemed very fair to me. Does the committee have any preference on this, or
we kind of beat it to death, and I don't think we've gotten anywhere by doing it?
I think it's, Mr. Chairman,
Maddox,
if the federal form is as close to what we wanted in the first place as I think it is, it avoids confusion. And I'd like to hear from law enforcement whether or not they think if we use the federal form but under a state format, we can run off state forms that have extra, or they could photocopy off the federal form. I'm trying to think of some fast way of people filling out a form without doing it twice. That's all.
Do you think the feds would ever actually accept a state form?
No.
I don't think they would.
Not with 50 states out there. But could we hear from law enforcement about that?
Please come forward.
Where'd the Holly go to?
Chairman Calhoun, I'm Major Dean Renfro, Oregon State Police Criminal Investigation Bureau Commander. And it would be in my department that we would do the fingerprint check of the applicants purchasing firearms. First of all, the identification is a critical factor, in our opinion, for establishing a positive ID of an individual. The list that's in the bill includes those identifications that indicate origin of the individual. Often those documents, in addition to other identifying factors, list the demographic information such as height, weight, address, and so forth of the individual. I think that standardized identification in itself is not adequate for this reason. If just any ID is used to purchase a firearm, once that check, let's assume that it accompanies a fingerprint, is sent into the Identification Bureau and the State Police and ran against a computer history file, and assuming there's no record on the individual, then that document will be returned to the local agency. If that local agency doesn't have sufficient information to do additional follow-up, if they choose to do so in attempts to further identify this individual, then it may become more burdensome for them. As far as the fingerprint document itself, if we anticipate checking through a computerized system for positive identification of individuals, we will have to have a document that's consistent with our standard fingerprint cards, similar in dimension, so that it could be placed in a computer and ran through a, let's say, a hopper or an automated system. Otherwise, if the form bears a set of thumbprints and it doesn't conform to our regular fingerprint cards, there will be quite a bit of manual labor involved in trying to develop or enhance this fingerprint so that it can be checked against computer records, thus delaying the time that we can check against criminal record information.
Okay, I'm going to move that we put the federal language into the bill. Any objection?
Any other objection?
This?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Two objections. Do we have? Let's. Representative Brian.
Take a roll call.
Representative Brian, do you have a comment? I'm pliable on this, but we're just yeah, beating this thing around.
That's
around.
Why
I want to do something here.
My inclination is to do something, and we'll look at it in the morning, you know, after the dust settles a bit, and get something in. And I like having a photograph. And that's why I would tend towards the other language. That's all.
Okay, let's Representative Brian, I'll withdraw my motion. Do you want to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that language be used on the forms and in the bill where it references identification that say two pieces of current identification, one of which must bear a photograph of the applicant.
Any objection? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Bryan?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Aye.
Miller?
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, let's move on. The next one we have is the 15-day waiting period. And I don't know if we want to start getting into that argument today because we could be here for weeks. Anybody's 15 days at least. Anybody have any strong desire to get into this issue today, or we can leave this one for later? Good. We'll leave it for later.
Mr. Chairman, I would.
Jim Bryan.
I'm not sure that this is our most difficult area. I think things like thumbprints and everything else, whether we have thumbprints or not, I think there has to be a period of time that allows law enforcement to do the check. And I think with a weekend involved, the testimony from law enforcement has been that 5 days is not sufficient. And whether it's keeping out the issue of thumbprints for this and that, it seems to me that 15 days is not an unreasonable period for a person purchasing a handgun when he has not previously been identified or has a concealed weapons permit.
Let's leave that alone, and we'll see what the committee, if the committee has any strong opinion after we think that one over in the morning.
Chair?
Jim Clark.
Is the 15 days the estimate of what it will take to do the background check, or is it a magic number somehow prescribed for some reason, 15 days for some reason?
The problem they have apparently with the 5 days is the mail time.
It's 15 calendar days, so you're really only talking 2 weeks.
What's the purpose of the 15 days?
There's nothing magical about it except to give police agencies adequate time to do what they are required by law to do. And it is calendar days. It's not, and that's important to note, it's not, you're not tripling the amount of time. It is only really a doubling of the amount of time, if you think, because the weekends, you figure, now the weekends count.
President Dwyer.
Holly said, where are they required by law to check is what the problem I see is. They're not required by law to check.
Under this bill, they would be.
Under this bill, but under current practice.
That's correct. I misspoke. I was appropriately reprimanded, admonished.
Thank you very much, Representative Dwyer. Let's move on to the next one. We'll if we're going to come back to this one at all, we'll wait till later to discuss it, because this is going to be a tough one.
The 15 days?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've already made up my mind on that.
Okay.
It's not tough.
It's not tough for me for how I want to vote, but I think it may become tough in terms of some other problems. Let's go on to the thumbprint, which I think is one that's a concern for a lot of people.
15 days discussion is a problem if the thumbprint isn't.
Mr. Chair,
do we want to save the thumbprint also?
I have a question for
Representative Clark.
I guess for Mr. Nichols, for thumbprint question.
Nichols, could you please step forward and help us out, sir?
Mr. Nichols, I can have the right.
I don't. There's no hidden agenda with this question. I just, as I've thought about this bill since the first time it was brought in front of us, I keep coming back to what may not be a logical breakdown for somebody else, may not satisfy other people in terms of their concerns about the bill. But I keep coming back and saying, why is there a logical breaking point between the rancher who wants to go out and buy a gun for his son and a person who wants to buy a handgun or wants to get a concealed weapons permit in terms of the fingerprinting requirement? Is there a logical breakdown there for anybody but me? Well, can you separate out those two situations?
The subject of thumbprint caused more heartburn on all sides than anything else in that the study group worked with. If the Oregon driver's license was worth anything like the Virginia driver's license, where it really means something, there wouldn't have been any need for it. Law enforcement says they can't positively run an identification without a thumbprint. I believe at our meeting this afternoon we talked about, prior to this, about asking the committee to perhaps waive the thumbprint on rifles and shotguns. But was there any decision, Leon? Was there on thumbprint for rifles and shotguns?
It's the study part. No, the study part requires that they use the same forms.
He's asking even though they're not.
You don't have to wait, but that wouldn't include thumbprints.
But that, even though it's in the study, it's not any place else.
Was there anything done on that we talked about?
The study says you use these forms for rifles and shotguns.
But I don't think that's sufficient to make it happen.
Oh, we have to deal with that. That's a procedure.
That's what I'm trying to clarify.
Let's get to what we really want to do, and then we'll make the bill do it.
The big issue we have here is we understand the thumbprint on the concealed weapon permit, but we're not sure what the thumbprint is for except for the concealed weapon permit. Not of what happens with the thumbprint after you get it or requiring destruction of it or something like that. Worth the policy decision of deciding whether or not there needs to be a thumbprint at all except for concealed weapon permits, I think.
Right.
So that's, if you can give us some comments as to why this bill would require there to be thumbprints for this study or for other purposes, not for concealed weapon permit, we'd appreciate.
Well, perhaps it may sound ridiculous to state, but from our point of view, the thumbprint on rifles and shotguns was to prove there wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
It was our contention all the way through that the bad guys buy their guns, or the vast majority of them, with the exception of the few purdies, buy them their guns elsewhere. Part of the bill makes it a crime for a prohibited person to attempt to buy a firearm. And we wanted to know how many prohibited persons were identified as attempting to buy any type of firearm, how many of those prohibited persons the district attorneys indicted, how many were tried, and how many were convicted, and how many were sentenced. And it's our contention that, the gun groups in the study that'll show that, like currently with ex-con in possession of a handgun, the DAs don't do it, and therefore, that was our reason for agreeing to it. The police had a different reason for wanting it, which was to identify the bad guys and catch them.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to comment, and that's why I referenced my study the way it did, was simply to to study the practices that we currently have to see whether or not they're effective, rather than burden all a tremendous class of people on the premise that, well, we're doing everything right, so we're going to burden them, and we're going to show you that we're doing right. Why don't we study past practices to determine whether we're doing anything wrong? And if we are, who is that's doing or not doing the right thing? That seems to be the, and that's what my study focuses on.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. McClark.
Can I come back and ask my original question again? I'm not sure that I heard the answer. And I guess my question again, Mr. Nichols, is if you were recreating the first draft of House Bill 3470 in the working group, and someone had come along and said the difference between the bill passing and not passing is whether or not you restrict the thumbprints to handguns and concealed weapon permits, exempting shotguns and rifles, would the response have been that the bill would have fallen apart, that the working group would have fallen apart over that issue? Or is there a logical place to draw the line there between handguns and concealed weapons on the one hand and rifles and shotguns on the other?
From our point of view, it would not fall apart if you took that out. Part of the problem with the thumbprint or with rifles and shotguns, some people on the study group wanted to segregate out the so-called assault rifles, although it's a misnomer, and treat them differently than other firearms. It's our contention that mechanically the so-called assault rifles are mechanically indistinguishable from a sporting right. gun, and it's just furniture, extra magazines, straight right. line stocks, etc. So, but from our point of view, it would not kill the bill if that came out.
What about from law enforcement?
In our original concept, law enforcement knows that some crooks do buy rifles and shotguns. It's quicker to buy sometimes than to steal if it's not readily available. We do know that does occur. And when that was brought up in committee meeting, one of the committee members suggested, let's give it a 2-year shot and then come back to the legislature and say it wasn't necessary or it was necessary. But we have no way of determining who the crooks are who have purchased the long weapons without doing this type of identification.
Okay.
I might add that it was not law enforcement who brought that issue to the table to start with.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Clark, if I may, I'm operating a little disadvantage here because the issue was brought up by John Hosford, the executive director of the Citizens Committee, and he sort of dumped it on everybody without much discussion, and it just kind of like topsy grew.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess what I'm trying to do, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nichols, is balance the need and the value of this study. On the one hand, what?
Hard to find it.
The need and the value of this study on the one hand against what my dad used to call wear and tear on the machinery, meaning emotional wear and tear on all the folks out in my district and Representative Baum's district and Representative Dwyer's district and all these other places that are hearing that they're going to be fingerprinted when they went to buy a shotgun. It's got to be a pretty important study. And I mean, that, I guess that's what you're telling me we're balancing here is the need for this study to get some good information so that hopefully down the road and I'm not seeing the balance right now.
Recently, there was a study done by the U.S. Department of Justice, known by the names of the people who did it, Wright and Rossi from Harvard, I believe they were. And they surveyed incarcerated felons in 10 states and federal penitentiaries, and they came up with a figure that 6% of the felons purchased their handgun or their firearms through dealer channels, and that the majority of those use surrogate buyers, wives, girlfriends, other associates who did not have criminal records. I think I have a copy of the Wright-Rossi study. I'll be happy to furnish it if the committee would like to see it.
I'd like to see it.
Representative Mannix has something, but I want to get real quick. How much is it going to cost for this inside of this study for every one of these fingerprints to be run? $12 a piece? To write a kind of fingerprint?
Major Renfro from the state police did have a figure, and that was brought forward, but I do not recall what it was. It's It has to do with equipment they're attempting to put into the Identification Bureau anyway.
So we're looking at 12 bucks, amount for fingerprint multiplied times the number of guns bought in Oregon in order to run this study. Fingerprint in the study right now. Do you have anything to add to that, briefly add to that issue?
Question was the cost that would.
Chairman Calhoun, Major Renfro again. We did a research project based on 20,000 increments. In other words, 20,000 individuals processed in increments up to 100,000. We estimated that for each individual, it would require, based upon this automated system, about $10 a piece for a transaction. If it was 100,000 that we did over a two-year period, for example, it would be close to